What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, guys? Welcome to this podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at Salman Ali NBA on Twitter. Here joined by Ali Khan Bijani. We're actually doing a podcast in person for the first time since COVID started.
We're both vaccinated.
Yeah, yeah. Both not wearing masks. So I feel a little scared. I feel a little scared being this close to a person, a human being, without a mask.
But we are very safe people overall, usually. We kind of stick in the...
And we actually didn't plan to have a podcast today. I actually just felt like doing it because... This KJ Martin thing is becoming such a thing where it's like you have to talk about it. Like his development in the past few weeks, it's just accelerated to a new level. And the ball handling responsibilities he's had to take on with just the amount of players that are hurt for the Rockets.
You know, one thing that's really impressed me about him is just how quickly he's learning without practice time. I mean, I know he's getting the opportunity to play these 38 plus minutes, 40 plus minutes a night, especially during the stretch. But the fact that he's doing this without practice time and getting better as a overall player is very good to see if you're a Rockets fan.
And to me, the most impressive thing for me is like the 3-point shooting. He was 3-5 from three tonight, 20 points, 10 rebounds, 7-10 from the field. The three, like, that was a weakness of his going into the season. Like, can he ever develop a 3-point shot? Hell, he's shooting over 40% on the season. On the season.
Wow.
And on good volume.
It's a really obscure stat, I know, but it just shows kind of how well he's playing right now. Among players in the NBA who have had five or more starts, he's second in that category in terms of three-point percentage. So he's getting better. He's starting all these games. He's showing that he's improved his shooting touch. He's worked on his mechanics extensively with John Lucas, as you know, Salman. He's playing extremely well right now.
Yeah, and like it's funny. I had a podcast last week with Jackson Gatling, and all we talked about on the entire podcast was Kevin Porter Jr. because I thought he was the most intriguing prospect, young prospect the Rockets have. And I actually mentioned really briefly that he's not the only young prospect they have. The other young prospect they have is KJ Martin, and like it's interesting. I never thought he would become this. What he is right now, he's 20 points per game in the NBA is nuts. Like that, I don't care what you are. I don't care how bad the team is. It is impressive to score 20 points per game.
You know, one thing I do want to bring up when it comes to him is the fact that, like you said, everybody talks about Kevin Porter Jr., how good he is as a scorer, ball handler, all these things like that. But I think from an athletic perspective and how raw he is, you can mold KJ Martin into whatever type of player you want him to be. Heck, you're seeing Steven Silas try him in different situations and positions. When Olynyk and Wood are both healthy and playing together, you're seeing KJ Martin play alongside them at the three. Whenever he's coming off the bench, he's playing sometimes at the two with three other bigs. I mean, I know it also depends on, I have to put the caveat, it also depends on who's healthy and on the floor, but the fact that he's comfortable kind of putting him out there as a ball handler or somebody who can run dribble handoffs or do different types of actions is a testament to just how much he's improved with his tight handle of the ball.
And whenever these guys do get back, whenever these guys are healthy, like you at this point, you have to put the ball handling prowess on both KJ Martin and Kevin Porter Jr. You have to emphasize that. They have to both be central to your offense. You can't prioritize one over the other because, frankly, this latest stretch by KJ Martin is might be better than any stretch we've seen this season from Kevin Porter Jr.
I agree. And, you know, one thing, and I've been noticing this a lot since he's been playing a lot more minutes, one thing I really like about KJ Martin that I think is going to translate well if he becomes, you know, possibly a really good player, but at least a good role player, is the fact that when he closes out, especially when he's in that corner and closing out, all he needs is one dribble, because after that first dribble, he's already in the air. He's levitating, he's elevating, he's going up, he's hanging. He has great hang time. And for a guy to close out that well, especially with how defenses play you, if you're knocking down your three-point shot like he is right now, it allows you to be acrobatic around the rim if you can be and finish over these lengthy players. Against Gobert, against Jokic, against Ayton, against all these bigs, against the Lakers, it was Drummond. He has the unique ability to finish over them with his jumping ability, and also has the great ability to offensive rebound and have a quick second jump with his shot backs.
And he was drafted pretty much because of his physical tools, because people thought he'd become eventually a 3-and-D kind of guy.
Yeah.
And a good perimeter defender because of his athletic ability. Right now, he's not that, obviously. It's going to take some time for him to become a good defender. But the hope there is that he eventually gets there and that he can become the full package. This offensive versatility you're seeing from him can be combined with the physical tools to actually be a real NBA player. It's going to take some time for him to, you know, for mentalize like that. It's going to take some time for him to get there. But, I mean, it is encouraging that he has this much offensive ability early on. Nobody thought he'd be this. He was the 52nd pick in the NBA draft.
We thought he was 2 or 3 years away from contributing. And the fact that he's getting playing time now,
I wasn't
but
sure
also
if he was ever going to contribute. Like, honestly, like there were when you draft that low, mm-hmm. it is a complete crapshoot as to whether or not you're an NBA player. Not a good NBA player. Not even a very good NBA player. Whether you're an NBA player. Like, yeah. Most of those guys stick around the G League and then they wash out. Right? Like, you get the occasional guys who make it and they're good role players, right? Like your Draymond Greens of the world. And like, the reason we can remember those stories off the top of our head so easily is they're so rare.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying KJ Martin's going to become that. Obviously, it's so early. It is so early. The sample size is so small. But it's surprising, like, because none of us saw this coming. Now, like, absolutely, like, you ask anybody in that Rockets media room, any Rockets fan, anybody, like, even more than Kevin Porter Jr. Kevin Porter Jr., there was some thought there, even going into that draft, that he was a legitimate, talented offensive prospect. And when the Rockets traded for him, they traded for him because they thought he could be a diamond in the rough somewhere. They thought if they can get rid of the off-court stuff, that he could become something. This is not something anybody saw.
One question I do want to ask you, because I think we're about to get to this the way we're both thinking right now. Is KJ Martin a better long-term prospect than Kevin Porter Jr.?
It's tough to say, but I think they're at the very least equal.
I've been saying this a lot recently and over the last few months, even after the Kevin after they were playing in the bubble and came back after the All-Star break. I like KJ Martin a lot more. Now, okay, you know what? People will mix my words. I like KJ Martin a lot, and it wouldn't surprise me if he turns out to be a better NBA player than
Kevin Porter Jr. He's a more efficient NBA prospect, right? That's for sure. That's like, you can't even argue that. Like, he's the better shooter right now. Right now. Like, year one, that's...
Even with his mechanics and how he's growing.
Yes. Yeah, he's already the better shooter.
Okay.
And but there is a ball handling and passing element that he doesn't have, right? And Kevin Porter Jr. has that. He has that innate, I can find open shooters, I can find open guys.
He's grown with his vision, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, but that's something you just can't teach, right? Like some of that is just like, you have it or you don't.
Yeah.
And he has it. KJ Martin doesn't. And that's, so that makes him a different prospect. They're different players. They're two totally different players. You watch them play, just because they might be getting similar numbers on similar nights, like, it doesn't mean they're the same type of players at all. And I don't know. It just throw me for a loop, right? You never expect prospects to become like this. I think if you give everybody in that Rockets front office truth serum right now, they all come out saying, "Yeah, we had no idea he'd be this. No idea." Like they drafted him at the 52nd pick. If they thought he was going to be a really good prospect, they would have bought a pick earlier.
You know, we've talked about the Rockets' lack of draft capital during a Harden era. This season, they've had a chance because of the injuries to have 29 players, play for them.
They got to explore. They got to explore.
A lot of them are these younger guys. My question for you is the young team, including KJ Martin, this young core of players that they have, is this a good enough type of nucleus you can build around?
No, they don't have a nucleus yet. They have stuff. They have stuff. Like, they have young. They basically have two bona fide prospects: Kevin Porter Jr. and KJ Martin. Other than that, everybody that we're talking, that we're thinking of, right? Thinking Jae'Sean Tate. You're thinking Christian Wood. You know, possibly Kelly Olynyk, right? Like, these are all good players, but they're all in their mid 20s, right? Or even late 20s in the case of Kelly Olynyk. So this isn't what I would call a young core, but it's the start of something.
So just to make sure we're on the same page, I think you and I both agree their timeline is much younger than people may think.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's one of those, like, you try and try and try to tell this to people and they get angry because, listen, I understand. Nobody wants to go through a long rebuild, right? Right. And so you're plugging in, okay, this is our future point guard of the future. This is our future center. This is our, like all
you, that. You can see on Rockets Twitter, for example, Rockets fans trying to give themselves hope with these young players. But it takes time.
I don't want to be a downer with this stuff, right? Like, I for Rockets fans' sake, I want this team to be as good as fast as they possibly can. But the reality is, the way they gave away prospects when they were a contender, the way they were, you know, just burning through capital, which was the right move, and we all praised them for doing so at the time, it's handicapped the way they're going to rebuild. Now they've stocked the cupboard a little bit, but it's on the back end. It's not coming, you know, right away, and they're gonna have to wait a little bit to get some of these young prospects. And hell, maybe they get lucky next year. Maybe one of these three first round picks coming up is a stud. But until they get a stud, bona fide star prospect,
and even though it takes a few seasons for that to happen, and for that stud to be able to get to a point where he's carrying a team,
but what I'm saying is, like, until they know that they have that stud, you can't build timelines.
Good point. Yes,
you don't build from the outside, and you build from the inside out.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Like any player that's remotely good right now is likely going to be traded if they are not younger than 25 years old. And they're probably going to be traded for draft picks because those picks are probably going to align better with whatever timeline they get. And it's going to suck. It's going to suck to see maybe someone that is good right now being traded for someone you're not going to see for a few years. But it's probably going to be the right basketball play. But I don't want to get away from why we're doing this podcast. Like, they have something right now, and we both didn't think they had something this year.
Yeah.
Right? Like it was going to be a really, really dreadful season, and there weren't going to be bright young spots, and they have bright young spots, and they give credit to Rafael Stone, right? Like he gets credit for this. This was his first draft pick. He has not drafted a player yet other than KJ Martin, and if he's a hit right away in the second round, it does.
And remember, they traded back for that pick.
Yeah, and it makes you look at him in a positive light. You gain stock from doing stuff like that, right? You get credibility from getting these steals, right? Like that's why Tim Connelly is such a respected executive. Like he was able to find these gems in the late first round, early second round, and turn them into actual legitimate cores.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, like I said, this is a spur of the minute podcast. So there was an interruption. We are back. I can't control our environment. Our environment's very strange. All right, like there's a reason we're together right now. I don't really want to talk about it on the podcast because, again, I'm a private person. I really don't want to share much with you guys. I like you guys. I don't love you guys. You know, I don't know you guys that well. So we're just gonna suffice to say we got interrupted. We are back.
Oh my god!
And we're gonna record part two of this podcast. Where did we leave off? I remember where I left off. We were talking about how Rafael Stone does get credit for getting these guys late in the draft, getting Kevin Porter Jr. for nothing, getting KJ Martin 52nd in the draft. Like that goes on your that goes on your track record. Like much like Tim Connelly gets credit for drafting guys like Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray late in the draft, and you know it just is it factors into the equation in terms of how we evaluate this guy. Now, obviously, 1 year, right? What you had one good year on the job. That's not how reputations are made. Reputations are made based on multiple years on the job. So I do think this does go in the positive column for him, though.
I'm still going to have to wait and see.
Sure, you know, what happens. What I'm saying is this was a good year on the whole.
Well, I think just besides the draft too, the players they've brought in who they've given a chance to earn playing time, Armani Brooks, Kyrie Thomas, Cameron Oliver now. They brought in Justin Patton, who they thought that could be a rim runner. Like just giving young guys a shot. Athletic guys who can potentially play the way they want to play. You can tell that he has a type. His type is bringing athleticism here that they can mold and make them into good players and also just help them become better shooters. John Lucas is always working with these young players every single day, along with the rest of the developmental coaching staff. And so you're hoping that with that work and also the fact that they have those raw tools already to work with, that you can put together a roster full of these lengthy, big players to be successful.
Or you build their values up and then you eventually move
them down. that too. Yeah, of course.
Right. Like, so, and, you know, also, like, he's done a good job at, like, correcting mistakes that the front office has made. The John Wall trade was correcting a mistake. The, you know, the Kelly Olynyk trade was a great correction, right? Like, Kelly Olynyk by far has been the better basketball player than Victor Oladipo this year. It's hard to argue. And he's been healthier as well, and they're going into an offseason with less uncertainty than the Miami Heat, right, with Victor Oladipo. Now, I don't know what decision they'll make. They still might let him go. They still might let Kelly Olynyk go. But now they don't have to worry about re-signing Victor Oladipo with his injury issue.
Hindsight is 2020, just a little off topic. Would you, if any team offered Oladipo the contract, that extension the Rockets did earlier this season reportedly, would you, as Victor Oladipo, take it right now, given the situation?
Of course, I would have taken it in the moment. I was surprised that he turned it down. That made it clear that he was not long for the Rockets. When he turned that down, it made it clear he was going to be traded. For me, you know, like a lot of people could have read it differently, but like it's like he was clearly out of. They were miles apart on asking prices. Like the fact that the Rockets offered that and he turned that down, no way. Are you bringing him back or risking what he's going to demand the offseason?
Good for the Rockets, though, that they got Kelly Olynyk here, who's somebody that I think they feel like can be not a long-term piece, but somebody who can help bridge the gap and continue to help, you know, these young guys be good NBA players, make good product on the floor.
And they want to be competitive, right? The front office may view it differently, but the coaching staff certainly wants to be competitive. You know what helps you be competitive? Good veterans. Kelly Olynyk is a good veteran player to have, and if he's back with the Rockets next year, the Rockets are going to win more games because of him. Maybe not a lot. Like, he's not James Harden, obviously, no. But like he's a good player, and good players help
win. And Silas has always talked about this, especially the second half of the season. He goes out of his way to always mention Olynyk, DJ Augustine, just veteran players who are helping their teammates be successful. And when you have a good core group like that, it allows you to be able to do certain things with your younger players. Another guy, Avery Bradley, who's not playing right now, but somebody who Coach Silas also admires as well. And all that does is once you have veteran players here and they're bought in just the way these veteran players on, they became a soundboard. They became an echo chamber for you to get on these younger guys, get on them about work, get on them about film study, get on them about working with the coaches. All these small things that you need as a young player to continue to develop and prosper and go on that trajectory that the coaching staff in the front office hopes you to be, that's what he's doing. He's establishing that culture that we had talked about before the offseason.
And you know, like for me, I'm a bit of an anarchist when it comes to rebuilding. I'm always like, if you don't have that guy, tear it all down. And what's interesting about this is, like, I'm not even upset that they're not tearing it all down right now, because they're not bringing in these veterans at the expense of not developing these young guys. They're still bringing in guys like Khyree Thomas. They're still bringing in guys.
You have to have these players.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And they're still taking two-way contract guys. Like, they're still getting young guys, but they're also having these veterans. And I suspect that these veterans aren't on the team if they weren't brought in via trade, but that doesn't matter. The fact is they're here.
I want to read a quote, and our good friend of ours in media, covers the Rockets, covers many other teams, Tim McMahon, ESPN. Yeah. He came out today with a story. He had spoken with Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta. I want to just read a quote regarding about what's going on right now. I never thought I could feel this good when I've been so upset about losing. But when I look at all the draft picks that we have in the future, I'm just happy. And it's unusual to feel this good with your coach and your general manager, but I do.
So what he's saying is not wrong there, but for God's sakes, Tillman, get a PR guy. Like for God's sake, like whoever is advising you to like say these things right now, your Q level, Tillman, is at ground freaking zero. Right, you are not a respected owner right now. Now, like, it's not to say that, you know, what you're saying in this specific instance is wrong. Rafael Stone has done a good job. Steven Silas, like, yeah, it's, you know, we'll see what he does next year and for the remaining years of his contract. The wins and losses do go on his record.
No, he later said, and just to your point, he said, quote, "I know my basketball guys know what they're doing. We're not going to do something stupid to try to get into the playoffs next year. That then will prevent us from competing for a championship in a couple of years."
He has the right perspective there, right? A lot of owners don't, right? A lot of owners want to win right away. And I'm not, this is not me, you know, buttering up Tillman. Like,
Rockets, what about to get on you, my guy?
No, listen. Like, I'm just saying that this is, you'd rather have this be his perspective than saying, "I want to win right away. I want to win next year. I want to win right now." Right? And the fact that he has this healthy perspective about the draft picks, I suspect Rafael Stone is kind of showing him what's going on here, right? Like, I suspect the front office there is guiding him.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's bought in to what they're selling is good. It is good. If you're a Rockets fan, it is good. It's terrible PR because you the Rockets lost James Harden, Mike D'Antoni, Daryl Morey in 1 year. In 1 year, and they didn't pay the luxury tax the past 2 years, and he is celebrating. He's doing victory laps, so it's going to look bad. Now, there were a lot of people taking this quote and, you know, extrapolating it out, like, you talking about the James Harden trade, right? Like, Bill Simmons had a tweet about the James Harden trade, right? That's not the right approach to criticize Tillman Fertitta. If you want to criticize him about the luxury tax. Criticize him about being very loud and not really backing up a lot of what he says, right? And criticize him for allowing these guys to walk. Tad Brown, too. I forgot. I didn't mention Tad Brown, but we talked about him a couple podcasts ago. That's another important face that's gone from the organization. And these are valid criticisms. The James Harden trade is just so early to judge right now. The picks are out into 2027, you won't know what that trade becomes until that final pick is drafted, or we see whatever, you know, comes from that pick. Like, whatever, if they trade that pick and whatever comes back, like, it's just too far into the future to make judgments and use this article as a vehicle to judge that trade.
I do want to make one last point, quote from the story. Actually, two quotes. We'll talk about both really quickly. Quote, "I'm the lucky person that gets to be the steward of the team for the city of Houston and the millions of people that live here. And my goal is to compete for a championship as many years as possible." Then he finishes it off by saying, "We're going."
This is Steven Silas, right?
No, this is Tillman Fertitta.
Okay, all right.
All right, and as he says later, "But as we know, when you compete for 4 or 5 years in a row, when you throw everything at it, which I was totally behind, this is what..." Which I was totally behind. "This is what happens in any sport. We're going to be patient. I think we'll be much better next year, and we'll be much better the following year, and then we'll be much better the following year." So he's laying down the foundation and letting the fans know through the story, hey, give us time. It's going to be a step-by-step process. we're going to have to incrementally take steps to get better. But, you know, that going back to that first quote I mentioned, I'm lucky. I'm the lucky person that gets to be the steward of the team for the city of Houston.
Yeah.
And the millions of people that live here, my goal is to compete for a championship as many years as possible. Clear theme right there, which we have seen throughout the organization. This is Tillman's team. This is Tillman's decision. This is Tillman's hand in everything.
Right. And I'm glad you said that, because as you're reading it, it just became crystallized for me. Like, he is the face of the organization.
Yes.
Like, for so many years, it was Daryl Morey. Then when Daryl left, it became Tad. This is now his team full, like, through all the way throughout. He has his fingerprints all over it. He picked the general manager. He picked the head coach. And he's going to pick the next CEO. This is his team. And he is probably going to be the vocal figurehead from now on. Like, we're not going to hear Rafael Stone that often. Like, that's what I suspect from just this first season. He's not been as vocal as Daryl was. Maybe he changes that.
He made a Twitter, though, Salman. Come on. If you make a Twitter, you have to be vocal.
Yeah, and nobody had any idea that he was following a lot of these reporters. Like myself, I had no idea that he was just following us, right? But yeah, but he's more inconspicuous. He's more in the background. He doesn't like to speak to the media. He's very paranoid when he does speak to the media. Tillman is a loose cannon. And
hey, man, he has that show on Tuesday, or that segment.
I know nobody watches it. But but what I'm saying is, like, we're getting off topic, Matt. What I'm saying is, he is going to be the vocal figurehead. Nobody else is going to speak. You might not like it, but it's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. He needs to get stronger PR, by the way, because he says this in the worst timed moments. He makes these proclamations.
Honest question. Him saying it now. What is the biggest problem with him saying it now?
They just lost James Harden and Tad Brown within the span of a few months. Like, it a year.
So couldn't you make the argument that he's trying to give optimism to his fan base?
Yes, I understand. I understand what he's doing. The timing is just so poor.
But like, that's what I'm asking. Why do you think it's poor?
Well, because you just lost these two major figureheads in succession within the past few months. You can wait a little bit. You can wait 6 months, a year.
If he said this after the draft, would that have been better for you, for him to come out and say this? Or before the draft, or lottery?
Yeah,
or whatever?
Yeah. Well,
like, if he sends himself to the lottery, right? He was the representative for the team at the lottery. Would it have been okay for him?
That would have been actually perfect timing, because that's when you start talking about the future, right? You start talking about that around draft time. And I don't know. I have no problem with him saying this.
No, I'm just trying to understand your perspective.
It's just, if I were ahead of, I don't know if he has his own individual PR team. I would assume so. If I were his PR person, I would not tell him to speak right now.
Yeah, I mean, Soma, one thing that I've learned about Tillman Fertitta, even my first time kind of speaking with him in person, which was after the Rockets lost to the Warriors in the 2019 semifinals.
What a bizarre press conference.
You and I were in the tunnel for that. That was that was very interesting. But one thing I've learned about Tillman, though, is that, you know, you never know what you're going to get. But you do know what you're going to get.
It was just... I'm sorry. I don't want to talk about that. We were never going to talk about this press conference. So the Rockets just lost in 2018, eliminated from the playoffs. None of the coaches have spoken yet. None of the players have spoken yet. He is furiously walking down and finding media to just speak his mind, and that is just so classical new owner syndrome, right? Like that is such
that's where we first heard the term Tillmanisms. Or no, something like that. It was some sort of Tillman phrase that he used.
Yeah, I think he actually said Tillmanisms or something like that. But yeah, and what's interesting is he's actually not around the Toyota Center that often. Pretty hands off.
From what I understand, he does come to games even during the COVID season. He's been in the press box. He hasn't been sitting courtside, because that's different type of testing that needs to be done and everything like that in terms of NBA protocols. But you're right. It's been interesting not to see him in his customary seat, you know, at the front row. Even in the past, when he had first started, you would often see Daryl Morey or Tad Brown or some sort of members of the organization.
Well, remember, Morey was afraid to watch these games, right?
Yeah, like, he would go in the back. But, you know, there's only been one time this season where you could see Tillman Fertitta, Rafael Stone, Patrick Fertitta,
right,
all sitting next to each other.
And it's interesting because Patrick Fertitta has taken on that middleman role, right? He is the middleman from the front office to ownership, right? And he is the hands-on guy. I actually assume that he is the one explaining this to his dad because he is so in the trenches. To assume that he's not picking stuff off would be naive.
He's definitely learning.
Yeah, he's a very young guy. And I don't think he's making these decisions, but I think he's definitely in these discussions.
Of course, for sure.
James Harden doesn't call Patrick Fertitta to make his trade request if James Harden doesn't know that Patrick Fertitta is involved in basketball ops. He's definitely involved in basketball ops.
Yeah.
But my understanding is the role is that he is the middleman, the go-between guy.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you get.
It would make sense whenever you your father's the owner and that you want to be involved in basketball decisions.
And like having the owner's sons or relatives or like the nepotism stuff, it's not unique in the NBA. Like, it happens all the time. Like, look at Danny Ainge, right?
Let's look at the Golden State Warriors.
Right, like exactly. It happens everywhere. The Heat, right? It happens all over the place. I'm not defending it. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm not even saying it's a bad thing. It just is what it is. And my understanding is that he is the go-between guy, but it is becoming very clear that Tillman is the vocal guy. He is the guy that is going to be the front guy.
I think it was during that playoffs when he spoke to the 2019 playoffs where he was doing those rounds on ESPN, First Take, and all those things. Not just promoting his book, but also just kind of
talking about the team. Yeah.
Even more so than Daryl was. And we all know how Daryl was with the media. He would go out and always want to talk about his players, be optimistic. But Tillman was always out there during that time as well.
Yeah, and that's his role now. He's taken on the Daryl media role.
He's the face of the franchise.
Yeah, it's very strange. Normally, I mean, like, here's the thing. A lot of teams just don't have this type of figurehead, right? For a lot of teams, it's just the head coach.
Yeah.
In reality, like, the head coach takes on a lot of responsibility. The Rockets have always had someone in charge of doing that.
Yeah.
And now it's Tillman. Now it's Tillman. For better or worse, it's Tillman. Yeah, I mean, that's all I have to say today, to be honest. I just really wanted to talk about KJ Martin. Because he's become unavoidable to talk about.
No, you and I watched the end of that Los Angeles game together. We watched the game together for the most part. But, I mean, you and I had moments where we looked at each other like, wow, this kid is good. This kid has a chance to be something good.
And I've had moments texting you, like talking about KJ Martin. Yeah. Like I'm just like, this guy is like a real deal. We have to start talking about him. we'll see if the sample size keeps up. I'm not even saying.
We'll see. As defenses read more into him, look at him through the scouting reports. Yeah. Exactly. He does have things that he likes to do.
This could tail off. The shooting could tail off. Yeah. All this could disappear in an instant. It's just so.
It's variable.
It's a story now.
But now he has to show that consistency, and he has to go into the offseason to prove that not only is he working to improve overall in other areas,
but this was real.
But this was real, and it was, and he can be consistent with it.
Yeah. We did a pretty good podcast under the circumstances, a lot of people interrupting us, a lot of people coming in and out here. Again, not the perfect recording environment. We're actually recording on our phones. It's very strange. I'm used to having a microphone right here.
This is probably, Solon and I have recorded podcasts together in person before many times. But usually that's been at Toyota Center.
Yeah.
And that's been, after a game and it's, in the bowels of the Toyota Center, dark, quiet. This was just a completely different environment.
Yeah, and what's funny was we actually had people interrupting us there too. People would come in to that room we recorded at all the time, and we've gotten so used to it that we can talk over it. I hope that didn't get picked up, but yeah, like we've gotten so used to it that we can talk over it. And we can get past it, but it does get to a point where we just have to stop the podcast, address it, and come back. That's what we did today. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Follow me on Twitter at SolomonTheNBA. Follow Alikon on Twitter at
Rockets_Insider.
And where can you subscribe to The Athletic?
Yes. You can follow me there. I'll always post the stories there. Make sure you guys subscribe.
TheAthletic.com.
Athletic.com, yes. There we go. The Athletic, yes.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.